You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back, everyone, to Locked On Rockets, your home for daily and post-game commentary on the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. The Rockets sent everyone in Houston into the weekend feeling good. It wasn't just the Astros parade yesterday. After the parade ended, a lot of us, myself included, got home just in time to see the Rockets. Rockets took care of business in a big way, 119-104 in Atlanta. And it was a game that the final score wasn't even indicative of the level of domination. The Rockets were up 25 midway through the third quarter, and ultimately the Hawks cut into the lead in the fourth quarter because the end-of-the-bench Rockets rotation players were not as quality on a relative basis, and that's the theme we've seen in all three of the Rockets' beatdowns this season: Dallas, New York, Atlanta. Every game the Rockets have had a healthy margin. It's come back a little bit in the fourth quarter for various reasons. But at the end of the day, the encouraging thing is that the actual level of play for the Rockets is even higher than the 15-point margin would indicate. So it's a solid win by the Rockets on the road. Really, any road win is always nice, especially on November 3rd at this point in the year. And really, as we sit here on Saturday morning, the Rockets are now 7-3. I said going into this two-game swing, New York and Atlanta, even though a lot of Rockets fans felt bad on Monday after that Philly loss, falling to 5-3, first two back-to-back losses of the year, I said that if you get these two on the road, all of a sudden you can be 7-3 and feeling good about yourself. And, well, that's where the Rockets are after 10 games, and it's the best record in the Western Conference. Right now, hypothetically, they would be the one seed. So all of a sudden, despite the absence of Chris Paul, despite the early wave of injuries, the Rockets are still in a good spot. We'll talk more about that on the back half of the show. First part, I just want to talk about this individual game, because even though it's against the Hawks, no, the Hawks are not a good team. They're 1-8. There are a lot of things to take away from it. And I said during the game, I meant it, that, you know, I didn't know any better way to break it down than the Rockets are very good and the Hawks are very bad. But certainly within those, within that very good for the Rockets, and you have to give them credit for going out and playing that way, there are some individual standouts. Certainly James Harden, 29 points, 11 assists, 3 rebounds. He seems to have picked up a little bit of a second wind with his shooting, 8 of 15 from the field, 6 of 11 from behind the arc. James had been a little lethargic lately. He has gotten going more. It's not just the distribution, although certainly 11 assists to 2 turnovers is a big step in the right direction for him, but it's more that you're starting to see that 3-point stroke go down. Also got to the line 10 times, only made 7 of them. But for James this year, James has not gotten to the line as much as in years past, and I think it's not all just his mentality. Some of it's been a frustration that the officials are not giving him the shooting fouls they've gotten in the past, but to see him not only make his threes, but get to the line as frequently as he did, that to me is a very good sign. But the most encouraging of all, as I see it, is actually Trevor Ariza. Because with James Harden, I think we all expect him to get going. What really encourages me about the way the Rockets have played on this road swing in New York and Atlanta is Trevor Ariza. Now, Friday night, he had 12 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, 5 of 11 from the field. But what I'm going to do, I'm going to combine his stats from these two games in New York and Atlanta. If you combine the two stats, he's averaging 14 points a game on this road trip, 7.5 rebounds, and he's doing it on 10 of 20 from the field and 6 of 12 from behind the arc. So he's 50% shooting overall, 50% from behind the arc, averaging 14 points a game and over 7.5 rebounds. That, to me, is big because, as a lot of us know, Trevor did not have a good start to the year. And it's pretty telling that even with these two games, Trevor's player efficiency rating is still just 8.8. So there's a ways to go. But I saw some people wondering, and I get it because Trevor's 32, especially when he came off a little bit early from the foot sprain he had, that was the home game against Memphis that first Monday, came back earlier than expected on that Saturday, the 28th in Memphis, and then Monday against Philadelphia. Those were the two back-to-back losses. And those two games, Ariza shot 2 of 6 and 3 of 12. And the latter one, his 3-point shooting was 1 of 9. And I saw some folks on Twitter wondering if this was when he was going to have his decline season, if this was the beginning of the end. And I thought that was a little premature because certainly he was coming off a foot sprain that Mike D'Antoni said he expected would keep him out for weeks. Now, credit to Trevor, he got back sooner, and even with the poor shooting, he's certainly still been a positive player on the defensive end. But now, these two games on the road, you're starting to see him find that stroke, and that's a very encouraging thing just from the standpoint of reminding everyone that, hey, those low lights, those terrible numbers shooting to start the year, they probably were related to the injury. So that you're seeing him improve, that's big on a couple of fronts, because certainly it shows you that he's feeling healthier. That's always a good thing. But beyond just the health, it shows you that that level of play is still in him. And I feel a lot better after these two games. Again, small sample, but that, yes, Trevor Ariza has this level of play still in him. And, you know, for Trevor, it's less about the opponent. It's more about, is he able to make his shots? Is he still springy at the end of a 32-minute night, which is what he played Friday in Atlanta? And he was. It wasn't just the shooting. Also had 7 rebounds. Also had 4 assists. And by the end of it, he was playing as well as he did at the beginning. So I think these have been two very encouraging games for him. And it's reflected in the plus-minus as well, plus 22, which was the best on the entire Rockets team. So credit to him for that. Other guy who flashed, and I feel like I sing his praises every day, but Luke Bamute, folks, 20 points, 8 of 11 shooting off the bench, 34 minutes. It's incredible that this guy is making the minimum, because he's been by far your best bench player, even ahead of P.J. Tucker, who, P.J., another bad shooting night, 1 of 5. He's nowhere near what you want from his percentages. I encourage you guys not to look at those because they're a bit ugly. But P.J. was plus 19, so I'll say at least it was a step in the right direction in terms of his energy level, his activity, his defense on the court. Shooting, I'm going to assume a lot of that with P.J. is due to the hamstring injury, the fact he didn't get a full training camp, et cetera, et cetera. But in the absence of P.J. Tucker being 100%, Luke Bamute has picked up the slack and then some. And perhaps the most important part of Luke Bamute, he essentially is helping you facilitate the offense as well in the absence of Chris Paul. Because we've talked about, in these past couple of weeks, what do the Rockets do without Chris Paul? Because they need a third guard. They initially tried Demetrius Jackson, then they tried Bobby Brown. They actually signed Isaiah Cannon last week, had him on the roster for like 3 days, and then let him go. All three of those guys have gotten run at various points, and Mike D'Antoni has not found one that he consistently trusts. So right now, the Rockets' rotation only includes two guards. That's remarkable, and one of them, Eric Gordon. Now, thankfully, Eric on Friday was capped at 30 minutes, and he was fairly efficient, 20 points, 5 assists, 6 of 13 shooting, 3 of 7 from the field. But Eric, with his injury history, the Rockets are not going to overextend him. So when you have only two guards in Harden and Gordon, not just in the starting lineup, just two guards, period, that you're willing to play, and one of them, in the case of Gordon, given his injury history, you don't want to overextend him. So I would say mid-30s is the absolute most, and ideally you want to cap him around 30. That makes it pretty tough to fill minutes and get wins in the NBA. So you're going to have to see guys do some unconventional things. And Luke Bamute, even though he's typically a forward, even a stretch four in today's NBA, you've seen the Rockets use him to initiate the offense in many cases. And again, it's just incredible because the production from Bamute, you expect the defense, which he's done. You expect the heads-up IQ plays. In addition to making some shots, he was 2 of 4 from 3. That's always nice to see. But Luke does a great job at kind of cutting to the basket, making plays off the ball better than a lot of the other Rockets do. You expect that. I mean, now all of this is incredible for a minimum level signing, but I think we all knew that was a fabulous signing by the Rockets when it was made. But in addition to all of that, you're actually getting this guy to kind of help you from a guard perspective as well, at least with regards to initiating the offense, getting people where they're supposed to be in the half court sets. So yeah, Luke Bamute, Trevor Ariza, those to me were the standouts Friday night, because James Harden, yes, it's encouraging to see him get going, but with James, it's a matter of time. We all know how good James is. He's not going to shoot poorly for that long, and he's going to get back to the free throw line. But when you have your veteran variables, the guys like Luke Bamute, Trevor Ariza getting going, in addition to James Harden, Eric Gordon, that's when the Rockets are able to go from a team that just kind of scrapes by the way they did through the first 8 games to a team that can be really special and just blow the doors off of people the way they did on this 2-game road trip in New York against the Knicks and then Friday night in Atlanta against the Hawks. Besides those four, decent game for Ryan Anderson, 11 points, 8 rebounds in 25 minutes. Now that's big for him. I called out Ryan after the Monday loss to Philadelphia, when I believe he had 3 rebounds in 35 minutes. That's not good enough. Well, 8 and 25, that's a huge step in the right direction. Also made 3 of 8 from behind the arc, but you expect that from Ryan. That's going to come around. The energy level on the glass, that's a big step forward for the Rockets. It's not that the Rockets are the most intimidating team on the glass, but this was another game in which they won the rebounding battle 44-41. And they did it even though Clint Capela had just 6 rebounds in his 22 minutes. Clint, 12 points, 6 boards. And so that shows you that you're getting the level of energy from your veterans, like Ryan Anderson, who had 8 in 25 minutes, like Trevor Ariza, who had 7 rebounds in 32 minutes. Those are the types of little things, the contributions. Nene had 6 in his 17 minutes off the bench. Nene also had 8 points and 4 of 8 from the field. But those are the little things that show you the desire. And more than anything else, as we kind of close out the game portion of this podcast, that's what I want to focus on. It's the second consecutive game in which the Rockets really took care of things before the half. And that's remarkable because what Mike D'Antoni called them out on after Monday's game was the lack of grit, the lack of grinding. And I credited them for that after Wednesday's game in New York, the fact that they responded. Because as I said, it felt a lot like the comments early in the 2015-2016 season from Kevin McHale, which ultimately fell on deaf ears, and it made it seem to the Rockets front office that essentially McHale had lost the locker room because they were not responding. Now, of course, these players would run through a wall for Mike D'Antoni. It's nowhere near the same dynamic. Nonetheless, he did call them out a little bit. We gave him every opportunity to talk about any individual issue. The pace has been not where the Rockets want it to be this year. According to some metrics, it's been as low as like 23rd in the league. The three-point shooting after the first 8 games was 3rd worst in the entire league. We gave D'Antoni a lot of options. Certainly the defense wasn't great either, giving up 115 to Philadelphia on Monday. But D'Antoni did not make it about any one thing they were deficient as. He made it about the effort. He made it about, well, it's October, it's a long season, but these guys need to be more tuned in, more focused on an every possession basis. And since then, not just one game, they did it Wednesday, and you give them credit for that, but they did it Friday as well. So that's very encouraging that you see the Rockets, especially your veterans, just get locked in to that extent. Because, yes, at the end of the day, you could say this is one of 82 games. It's a bad Atlanta team. It's a very lethargic gym. Certainly the fans in Atlanta know it's not a good team. And it's November 3rd. There are a lot of reasons that you could sleepwalk through that game, especially because the Rockets are about to be coming home for a very long home stretch. We'll talk about that in just a few minutes on the back half of this show. But for the Rockets to show up like this, again, the final margin doesn't even do it justice because they were up 25 midway through the third. To see the Rockets, despite all of those things, show up, take care of business early. They were up by, well, a very comfortable margin, 69-51 at the half. And perhaps the most important part of this, the Rockets as a team did not even shoot that well from three. You had some individual standouts. As I said, Harden was 6 of 11. Ryan Anderson was 3 of 8. Bamute was 2 of 4. But overall, the Rockets, 16-47, 34%. That's okay. That's better than they were entering this two-game road trip when they were third worst in the NBA at barely over 30% as a team. But it's not like the Rockets just had one of those games where they won big because they just happened to be hot from the outside and no one can keep up with them. No, they won the game because they had more energy, because they had more focus. They played fairly well defensively. They created offense out of their defense. They got out in transition. They ran, and they were active, and they got easy buckets. And that's the recipe for consistent success, because there's going to be some variability with your threes. But when you have a team that brings that level of focus, and especially when it's veterans, because when it's one game out of 82 and you're in Atlanta on a lazy Friday night in early November, Ryan Anderson, Trevor Ariza, Luke Bamute, those are the types of players on the NBA who tend to check out the most. So to see them respond the way they have on this road trip, it makes me feel really good. It's not that there won't be bumps in the road again. I'm sure there will be, especially until the Rockets get Chris Paul back. They are playing a very short rotation. And as I said, it's pretty clear right now, for whatever reason, that none of the guards, Bobby Brown, Demetrius Jackson, Isaiah Cannon's not even around anymore, have done anything to make Mike D'Antoni believe they're rotation players. So there are going to be more bumps, but when you have a team that's this talented and you see them from a mental standpoint recovering to this extent and playing this hard in early November, to me, that's the most encouraging sign of all. And really, that's about wraps it up for my takeaways on this Rockets-Hawks game in particular. Now, the other side of it is where the Rockets are after 10 games, because this is kind of an appropriate evaluation standpoint. 10 games, you're almost 1/8 of the way through an NBA season. Basically, 10 times 8 is 80. Then you got to add 2 more to get to the 82. Rockets at 7-3, it doesn't take a real genius to figure out what that extrapolates to. 7 times 8 is 56. Then you would take at least one of the last two, going by a winning percentage of 700. So you'd basically be, you're projecting now at a 57 plus win pace, 57 point something would be your projection based on being 7-3 through 10 games. And I don't know about you guys, but I feel really good about that because Chris Paul's only played in one game. So if you're 7-3 without Chris Paul, if you're on a 57 plus win pace now without your marquee acquisition playing, I feel pretty good about it. And, you know, you could point out the Rockets have not had the strongest schedule, but they have had 7 of 10 away from home. And I know that you can point out that, yes, they're 1-2 at Toyota, they're 6-1 on the road. Folks, I feel the same way about that I did about the Astros this year. And people kept saying, oh, is home field advantage that big of a deal because they're so-and-so on the road? No, at the end of the day, you want to play at home. You're going to have some quirky things in small sample sizes. But the Rockets are a better team at home. Just look to last year. Very similar cast other than Chris Paul. They were 30-11 at home, 25-16 on the road. That's a pretty big difference in terms of home versus road performance. So eventually, they're going to get it clicking at Toyota Center. I'm not worried about that. Perhaps a great catalyst for that. Now that the Astros run is finally over, you should have a lot more energy, a lot more fans there and engaged. Maybe that will help as well in terms of the home court advantage at Toyota Center. But folks, 7 of 10 on the road, any kind of disadvantage or any advantage, I should say, from a weaker schedule to me is offset by 7 of 10 on the road, including two sets of back-to-backs in that first 10 games. And then you combine that with the injuries, not just Chris Paul, but Trevor Ariza, Nene, both of those guys have missed time. Eric Gordon missed a game with a stomach virus. So you combine all of that. PJ Tucker still not all the way back, in my opinion, from that hamstring pull. You combine those things with 7 of 10 on the road and two back-to-backs. And yeah, to me, any advantage of a soft schedule is more than offset by the difficulties the Rockets have had just from the logistics perspective getting through these first 10 games. So if you get through those first 10 at a 57 plus win pace with Chris Paul set to return at some point in the next 2 weeks, I would imagine, then yeah, you have to feel really good about where you are, especially with 8 of the next 11 at home in Toyota Center. So yeah, if you're trying to heal injuries, there's nothing better than being able to be at home in your own bed, also with your own training staff, your own equipment, all those types of things. They're home for all of the next week. They don't have to leave Houston because they have a game tomorrow against the Jazz, that's Sunday, then Thursday against Cleveland, Saturday against Memphis. So yeah, you've got an entire week where you do not have to leave Houston, Texas. They got in this morning sometime, middle of the night on that flight from Atlanta after the game. And yeah, they're here for, yeah, all the way until next Saturday night. So this is going to be a fun week for the Rockets. Hopefully it's a get right week from a health perspective. But even with the limitations in these first 10 games, yeah, you have to respect where they are. You look at the standings, they're tops in the West right now. And again, I understand the Warriors, the Spurs, some of these veteran teams. And of course, the Spurs don't even have Kawhi Leonard yet. But some of these veteran teams, they're not going all out in October and November. I understand that. But yet, when you're the Rockets and you have a lot to prove, yeah, 7-3, you'll absolutely take it. Now, the point differential is not as sexy as the record, but I'm not worried about that yet. Rockets are plus 4.6. You look at some of these other teams, the Clippers plus 8.9, the Warriors plus 8.3, the Thunder, who are just 4-4, are plus 8.6. I would not worry about the point differential. I know the Rockets have had some games that were closer than expected, partially because of the injuries, but another big part of it is like, you know, what happened Friday night in Atlanta. It's just the Rockets into the bench guys in the fourth quarter of a blowout are proportionally worse. And that's just, I don't know, that's just the way it goes for them. And you can't evaluate a team. And the Rockets have metrics for how to adjust point differential for rotation-level players. But just strict point differential by itself doesn't do that. So because the Rockets let teams like Dallas and Atlanta back in the game, well, not even back in the game, just let the margin look halfway respectable, cut it to 15, 16 points, that does not really say anything in terms of the value of how dominant the wins were as a whole, because the win margin was a lot greater than that when you were playing players that will actually be a part of the rotation when it actually matters. So that's why I don't really buy the point differential, especially this early in the year, that much. I kind of got into a little scrape last night with a national NBA writer who said the Thunder, he said the Thunder were the second best team in the league, even better than they expected. And my response, well, first off, the Thunder are 4-4. It's kind of ridiculous, in my opinion, to call the Thunder the second best team in the league, or any team for that matter, that's 4-4. I don't care what you say. You've got to see them win games first. We can defer to that. But beyond that, he pointed to the point differential. Well, folks, again, the Rockets would have a much better point differential if that 35-point lead against Dallas didn't shrink to 16 because of what happened in the fourth quarter of a blowout with, you know, the end of the bench out there. Same thing last night in Atlanta when they were up 25 and that lead got cut to 15. That has zero predictive value how the 10th, 11th, 12th guys on the Rockets' end of the bench play, because those guys are not going to be out there when the games are, well, in doubt against real opponents, which certainly the Rockets will have this week in Utah, Cleveland, and Memphis. So I wouldn't worry that much about the point differential yet, especially without Chris Paul. Now, it's one of those things, over the course of 80 games, I think it'll probably level out to where maybe eventually the Rockets kind of beat some teams into submission to where maybe they expand that lead from 20 to 30 in the final minutes of a blowout. That can happen too. But for now, through 10 games, I would not worry that much because, yeah, I can point to at least, well, two games and maybe three as well, because the Rockets had a much healthier margin than 22 against the Knicks at various points on Wednesdays, where the Rockets were, yeah, could have had 30-plus point wins in all, but sort of called off the dogs late. And so that, to me, I would not focus so much on the point differential at this point in the year. To me, it's about, are you finding ways to win the game and close out? And to me, they're doing exactly that. So you credit to them for that, and especially with the Rockets. I would say that's also point differential, something that's less important, in my opinion, for veteran teams. Because veteran teams, the Rockets are very acutely aware of the effect of fatigue. We saw that last postseason in the Spurs series. So even with just two guards, as I said earlier, the Rockets are trying to cap Eric Gordon's minutes. They are very wary of overextending themselves. So I think when they have a comfortable lead, they're going to take some players out, and even the players that aren't out, they're certainly not going to overextend themselves from an energy standpoint, risk injury, et cetera, et cetera. You're seeing the Rockets be much more efficient in terms of their usage of players, their usage of effort all the way down the line, as opposed to, you know, if it's a younger team, you might see them firing on all cylinders and just wanting to beat another team into submission, into the ground for all 48 minutes. I think for the Rockets, it's about just going out there and getting business-like wins. And for them, when they get a big lead in the third quarter and the game is over, well, they just want to get to the locker room, get the win, and move on to the next one. It's a grinding mentality. That's what Mike D'Antoni called them out on after Monday's loss to Philadelphia, and at least for two games on this road trip, the 119-104 win in Atlanta on Friday night, and of course the even bigger win in New York on Wednesday. The Rockets have done exactly that. Because of that, they're 7-3. Again, win pace of over 57 games at the basically 1/8 point of the year. So yeah, kudos to them for that. In my opinion, certainly you want Chris Paul back and your ceilings then go up. But as far as what you could reasonably hope for in his absence, which has been 9 games and counting to this point, I don't have much to complain about. I feel pretty good about where this team is at. Certainly they need to improve more in certain areas. But in terms of where their mind is, the energy level, the commitment, and, well, now even the injuries, because as I said leading off, you're starting to see these injured guys that have missed time starting to look healthier. Trevor Ariza has looked springy the last two games. Again, Nene, 8.6 rebounds, 4 of 8 from the field. Even your few guys that have been injured, about the last one on the list is PJ Tucker. You do want to see him get going from a shooting perspective. Hasn't done it yet, but even PJ, plus 19, which was the best off the bench in his 23 minutes on Friday in Atlanta. So your injured guys, they're rounding into form. The Rockets are starting to get the business-like wins, 57-plus wins without Chris Paul. To me, you should feel pretty good about your basketball team at this point, Houston. And beyond that, I don't know what to say. So I'll leave it at that. Again, thanks as always to you guys for listening. If you're not already following me on Twitter, you can do so at Ben Dubose. Also, you can follow the show on Twitter at LockedOnRockets, or you can email us, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com, with any questions, suggestions, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better program for you, the diehard Rockets fan. Once again, the happy final from Atlanta, Rockets 119, Hawks 104. Rockets back in action Sunday evening, home game, kind of a matinee, 6 p.m. early start because it's a Sunday against the Jazz. Look forward to seeing a lot of you guys out at Toyota Center for that one. Until then, have a good week in Houston, and look forward to talking with you again tomorrow as the Rockets take on the Jazz.